Eat shit and die, Ricky!
Eat shit and live, Bill.
People's eyes are gonna pop out of their damn skulls when they see this.
Listen, you little bitch. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish.
Finger licking good.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks podcast. I'm your host, Tim Trashmouth Mills. In today's episode sees the return of the one and only Tom Bienkowski of the band Flesh Creep. Now, if you missed it, they put out a brand new record a little over a month ago titled We Need You to Bleed, and I highly recommend checking that out. But before we dive into that, as well as some of his favorite horror sequels and more, I just want to remind you guys to go follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and X for all updates on the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by just sharing it around or rating and subscribing wherever you're listening. Or if you'd like to sign up for the Patreon, it is only $2 a month. The link for that is in the description. You'll get some stickers in the mail, a shout out on a future episode, and a couple other perks as well. So now with all that being said, I just want to say thanks again for listening, and let's get into this week's episode.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate you for coming back on the show. I'm stoked to chat with you.
I've been looking forward to it. Like, I had a blast last time.
Hell yeah, same here. Any questions for me before we dive right in? Or
not really. You were saying we're going to talk about sequels.
Yeah, I'll ask about your favorite horror sequels, and then, of course, it's been a little over a year since you were last on the show, so, like, anything you maybe saw, whether it was just a first-time watch or a new release, you know, over the last year, you know, not anything, you know, it didn't have to be, like, too recent.
I'll check my letterbox.
Oh, yeah. but of course, before we dive into that, I do like to ask about the music stuff, and, you know, you guys just released a killer new record at the end of March called We Need You to Bleed. Do you mind just tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind that, and then, of course, you know, just tell the people where they can find it, and I'll put those links in the description as well.
Of course, yeah. Our new record, We Need You to Bleed. We recorded it about a year ago. It's with our good friend Tom Stale Winton, is it, as he's credited on the record. That's a joke that the US might not get. There's a famous TV personality called Dale Winton in the UK, so that's a pun on that. We recorded it with our buddy, Tom. We mixed it with Zach Miller from Noise War Studios. Sweetheart, he made a real good job of it. Mastered by the GOAT, Will Killingsworth, Dead Air Studios. He's done 100 million records. It's come out really nicely. I think we've really kind of tapped into a sort of, in my head, how we've always sounded, but then I listen back to our old recordings and it's like, oh no, we were way off. But yeah, this feels like what I was hearing in my head the whole time. I was super blown away by the response. People have been super nice online. People have been coming out to the shows. Like, we just, the week after it dropped, we did a short tour with a band from California called Corrupt Vision. Sweethearts, love them to death. Check them out if you're so inclined. But yeah, we played a hometown show that got sold out, which was nuts. Like, I've never in a million years thought that we would be in a position where we were gonna fill a room. I did a couple of shows in Europe, and I don't know, I've never been in a band that's toured before. And so it was a really like a strange experience to be like, I'm in a different country from the one that I live in with my band. And we've just loaded our van with gear and driven to this place. And there's people from a different country have come out to see us. Mind boggling shit. Like, I still haven't been able to process it. You may be able to tell in my voice that I'm a little bit, I've got the tour flu it's all kind of, as soon as I got back, it all caught up with me, so I'm a little croaky. But yeah, no, as I say, it's been the blast. As I say, like, we've had the best time, and that's just the beginning. As I say, it's only been out for a month. We've got a lot of cool shit planned in the year that hopefully we'll be going everywhere, playing as many places as we possibly can.
Hell yeah. And I'll definitely find a link to the record, whether it's, you know, for sale or even, you know, just to the Bandcamp or whatever, and throw it in the description for people that want to check it out that haven't already, for sure.
I was going to say, well, it's being released stateside by our friend Tommy from No Time Records.
Hell yeah.
I'll have to have a look what the actual link is. I'll send it to you. But yeah, I think it's available stateside as of right now. I believe he just the other day got them from the pressing plant. They look gorgeous. yeah, another like huge milestone that like I never have been in a position where I've had my record pressed on vinyl before.
Yeah,
so that's trippy as fuck, to be honest. Like, our copies haven't reached us yet, but I'm really looking forward to being able to like sit down on my record player and hear it myself.
Hell yeah,
it's gonna be tight.
That's super awesome for sure, especially now that it's like post pandemic. You don't got to worry about everything being back the fuck up, is like, you know, vinyl wise, pressing plant wise, and stuff. So
yeah, no, of course, yeah, it's definitely one that we were kind of. We've been surprised at how smoothly everything's come along. And we're kind of, as soon as we said yes to them, I was kind of thinking like, we're not going to see these records for a year now. Like, And yeah, they've come through and they're real and they exist. and yeah, super stoked on it.
Fuck yeah. And of course you guys, you know, like you even have a track, you know, to kind of coincide with the show named Video Nasty, which I thought was super sick. It was one of my favorite tracks on the album. Obviously a nod to Video Nasties, I'm sure.
Of course, yeah. So the first line of the song is, let me remember it. first line is that this one goes out to Pasolini, who obviously, Pier Pablo Pasolini, who directed Salo. I don't think there's many hardcore bands that have written songs about Salo. I don't know, it was kind of, I don't know if you know the history of that guy. Like, obviously, he made that movie as a kind of critique of Italian fascism.
Yeah.
And as a result, got killed for it. Like, they fucking ran that dude over and, like, beat him to death and shit. Like, and it just made me, I don't know, I thought it was super interesting that, like, the idea of, like, there's always been this pushback from, you know, whether it be, like, the right, obviously, like, comparing that to then, like, later on, obviously, the actual kind of Video Nasty craze of them banning all, like, horror movies and stuff. And even to today where, you know, like I don't know, fucking over in your side of the world, like, Republicans trying to shut down drag shows or, like...
Yeah.
It's just, like, there's always been some bug to bear from that side of the political spectrum about, like, cool, transgressive, weird art. It's definitely a homage to some of the like forgotten classics of the Video Nasty era, but also, as I say, from before then and up to today, like,
oh yeah,
any cool shit that ruffles the feathers of stuffy conservatives.
Yeah. No, sometimes it's like you see a movie with some fucked up shit in it that comes out now and you're like, I'm glad this isn't finding a bigger audience, because then we hear all the backlash of the fucking church group.
Of course, yeah. Like, there's certainly, like, that's the shit that, like, I've always navigated to. Like, even in the horror world, like, I want shit to push buttons, you know what I mean? Like, anything that makes me feel kind of slightly uncomfortable and unnerved is, right up my alley, so... Oh, for sure.
No, I'm right there with you. Which we can move into the horror chat for sure. And do you have anything else you want to promote as far as anything coming up, you know, the rest of the year, either with Flesh Creep or, you know, any other bands or projects you got going on?
As I say, busy year with Flesh Creep. I don't want to say too much, but we're looking to hopefully maybe come over to the States next year.
Hell yeah.
We'll see if that materializes, but there's been talks. Until then, yeah, we're playing in as much of England as we could possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still a bunch of places we haven't played. And yeah, just kind of touring the record, hopefully getting more people to hear it, fucking spreading the word, the gospel. and yeah, as I say, it's just kind of we keep on at it more and more until we until we physically can't anymore.
Right. Hell yeah. Now, hopefully you guys do come over to the States. I'll make the trip, you know, even if it's a couple hour drive, you know, to catch a show for sure. You know, so
yeah,
you guys
like
be able to come over more often.
Sick. Yeah. As I say, like very, very early stages, but
yeah,
we're hopeful.
Oh yeah. Well, hey, they say you gotta like talk that shit into manifestation or manifest.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just gonna tell everyone that we're going over there until some promoter books us.
Right. Eventually, somebody will hear it. That's like, well, if they don't make it happen, I'll make it happen. You know, who knows? You know. But,
exactly.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. And I'll definitely look out. You know, I'll definitely be spreading the word about the record myself. And then, of course, when we drop this episode, you know, I'll be putting, you know, a song along with everything that I post. So.
I appreciate that very much, buddy.
Of course, man. Hell yeah. And then to dive into the horror side of things, you know, like I mentioned, this is your second time on the show, or, you know, we talked about, I don't know if I mentioned it since we've been recording, but this is your second time on the show. So we already talked about like your, you know, typical favorites and stuff, but I want to know what some of your favorite horror sequels, and just because it's your second time, it doesn't have to be part twos. They could be part four, yeah. Part seven, you know, stuff like that too. But
that's it. That's a good chat. Cause the first one I can think of is not a direct sequel. I think horror sequels are a difficult for me. Like, I think, obviously, like outside of like the big franchise horror picks, you know, your Freddy's and your Jason's and stuff, I kind of think most movies don't need a sequel. Like, there's very rare times when I think, like, yeah, like, I don't, unless it's like a drastically different type of movie, which is the examples they have all kind of fall into something where they've taken the initial kind of concept of the first movie and taken it in a wildly different direction. I think that's the only time when it really is like, I'm not generally the type of person who wants more of the same of any, whether it's music or movies or like TV shows or whatever. Like I'm always looking for like a cool, unique angle that they can take something in rather than just, oh, like that was cool, let's do it again. Like, you know, you're always going to be kind of getting to diminishing returns, I think, in most cases. As I say, there possibly are some few exceptions that I've got. The first example that I could think of, which was like as soon as you said it, the one that came to mind, again, not a direct sequel, but I'm going to talk about The Exorcist 3, which fucking rules so hard. Like, again, like I love The Exorcist deeply, not just as a horror movie. I think it's so much more than that. It's just a beautiful piece of cinema that I think holds up in any genre. Mm-hmm. And The Exorcist 2 is one of the biggest piece of shit movies ever. Like, it sucks so bad, and it just does everything in its power to try and like diminish the magic of the original.
Yeah.
Which again is a movie that I don't think needs a sequel per se. Like, I think it wraps up most of the plot fairly nicely, and like, and again, the loose ends, I'm the type of person that I like loose ends in a movie. Like, I don't want everything to be clean cut and satisfied. Like, there's something about like, yeah, I almost don't want to be satisfied by movies, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of, all of my favorites have questions at the end where I don't know how I feel about them, and like, oh shit, well, what's going to happen to this person, or this, what's going to come of this situation? And that's the type of shit that really, like, I don't know, gets me going when it comes to movies. And so, as I say, like when it's a direct sequel, like The Exorcist 2 is, I just think it just, like, in my mind, it just doesn't exist. I've like drawn a blank on it. Like, it's not canon to me.
Yeah.
Which is why I think The Exorcist 3 is so fucking good, is because it's barely about The Exorcist. Like, yeah. Especially when you go into the Legion, what's the director's cut?
Yeah.
Which again is like, to me, the superior cut of that movie. Because I remember watching the theatrical cut initially, and like really enjoying like all of the movie right up until it gets to the end, and like it just screams of like a studio stepping in and being like, oh, just put some Exorcist shit in there. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you've been on this weird, like, crime procedural this whole movie. Like, if, like, throw some fucking The Power of Christ Compels You type shit. Like, and it's really kind of like, as I said, the original ending is feels super tacked on and feels kind of just like almost fan service. And I remember like being let down by that because the rest of the movie is so fucking just weird and like dark and suspenseful. And it's just a great performance from Jeffrey C. Scott, who I love, is such a fucking like intriguing and bizarre character in this movie. I always feel like there's a lot of movies that I love that he stars in that like, I just think he always turns in this like really bizarre performance.
It's like almost campy, like, but not really. Like,
yeah, like there's a scene in The Exorcist 3 when he kind of is it. I think it's when he like he finds out his buddy has either been hospitalized or has been killed in the hospital or something. But like, it's a shot of the exterior of his house, and you hear him like pick up his phone, and he's kind of he answers the phone, and then he just kind of. He hears something, obviously, like off camera, like this bad news, and he just kind of goes, "Oh, it's really like, it's, I don't know, just something so simple as that." That's just kind of like, I was watching Hardcore recently. Do you know the Paul Schrader movie?
No, I've never seen that.
Oh, it fucking rules!
Oh yeah,
it's so that's again like George C. Scott in that. About his daughter goes missing and it turns out she's like been sort of like trafficked into the world, the underground porn world.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that, but I think it was on like a, I think like maybe Quentin Tarantino on his pod, somebody mentioned it on a pod. Yeah. I've never seen it. Yeah, hell yeah.
It's and as I say, like it's got like another fucking baffling George C. Scott performance where he hires a private eye to try and track down his daughter. And then this private eye, rather than just saying, like, oh, your daughter's doing porn, like, sorry, he hires out, like, a private porno theater and, like, takes this George C. Scott, who's, as I say, this girl's father, and, like, shows him the porno. And the whole time he's watching it, and he's kind of just like, oh, no, no. And it's like, just turn it off, man. Why would you
leave?
Why would you put him through that?
Yeah. You ruined the scene.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's a highly recommended also. But yeah, back to The Exorcist 3. I feel like we would be remiss talking about this movie if we didn't mention the jump scare of all time. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that is... And I've watched it so many times and it's still so scary to me every single time. I feel like that's something that kind of, again, like, especially, like, as I say, if we're talking about the director's cut, like, there's not really anything to do with The Exorcist, the original. But the fact that it's frightening to me on, like, so many repeat viewings,
yeah,
just like the original Exorcist was, is kind of, like, that's what marries it to the first one in my mind. Like, it's just the ability to yeah, make me jump out of my skin.
Yeah.
So that movie rules. Anyone that's listening, if you have not checked out The Exorcist 3, I believe Arrow have done a release of it where there's both the theatrical and the director's cut.
Oh yeah,
on there. So yeah, go hit up Arrow and check that out. what else do I have? Again, sort of obvious one, but I think this is probably the best. The best example I can think of is a horror sequel that I think maybe surpasses the original. Could be controversial. I'm going to go Hellraiser 2, Hellbound.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I like 2 over 1 myself.
I think, yeah, it's because it's just such a, like, again, it's a very different style of movie. Like, it's, you know, like the first one pretty much just takes place in the house. Most of it is Frank and Julia. Like, there's not like the Cenobites like aren't really in it.
Yeah,
and, like, which is cool. Like, that's one of the things I love about that movie is that like they're like sort of like principal. They're not even like antagonists. You know what I mean? Like Frank is the bad guy of the movie, And then the guys that like are on the cover of the artwork and stuff, and the guys that you like, you know, you resonate with, that like you think of Hellraiser and you think of Pinhead, like he's just this kind of guy that turns up every now and again and just sort of says like, "Oh, you fucked up now. I'm gonna have to rip you to shreds." Like, and like that idea that like he's just this very sort of like neutral kind of like force of nature, if you will.
Yeah.
Like I think that is something that's really cool about the original. But then, yeah, the second one just like opens it up in a way that's so fucking just like that kind of like depiction of like hell, I guess.
Yeah.
Is again, it's like the perfect level of sort of like, it's kind of campy, but it's also really fucking dark and scary as well. Like it's just the right level where it's like fun, but not too fun.
Yeah, I agree. I love the way Hell looks in Hellbound, and the fact that Julia kind of becomes the full villain in that one is almost even cooler. So,
it definitely, like as I say, like I say, excellent performances all around. The doctor guy, I forget his name, with the like
Trenard, I think Dr. Trenard.
Yeah, with the big like snake thing on his head.
Yeah, that part's sick as fuck too. Yeah, when he turns into a Cenobite, you get to see, and that's another thing, is you get to see people like turn in and out of being Cenobites and stuff, you know. So
exactly, like, yeah, and it kind of like, I don't know, like again, it sort of dances very nicely on the sort of like, it doesn't give away too much. Like there's still a kind of mystery of what these people are and what they're doing, but it shows you a little bit behind the curtain. And like that's the kind of cool thing about even just, yeah, whether it's the Cenobites themselves or this like hell realm that they live in, there's always like, as I say, you kind of get to see it, but not too much of it. There's like, it's still like, obviously there's all those like long kind of endless corridors and stuff, and like they all seem to like go into these like weird rooms which have, and it's like you just get this real like feeling that this universe that they're in is so like expansive and endless. And I think there's even a couple of shots where you can kind of see over like almost sort of like a maze of all these little corridors and stuff. And it's just, I don't know, it really, it kind of, it reminds me of, it almost kind of reminds me of like, I don't know if you're into like death metal at all, but famously a lot of the kind of like classic, like early 90s death metal records were, the cover art was done by a guy called Dan Seagrave. And he has these, again, like really sort of just like, expansive universes is the only way I can put it. Like I'm trying to think of examples. Who did, like, he did Dismember, Everflowing Stream, Suffocation, Effigy of the Forgotten, that's a great one. The Benediction record, that's one of my favorites. One of the Morbid Angel records as well. Either way, like, check them out. They're really kind of cool, like sort of like fantasy horror sci-fi style landscapes that definitely you can kind of look at one of them and it'll give you that feeling of Hellraiser 2, for sure.
Like there's a greater mythology here that this just hints at, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
No, fuck you.
I was going to say, before I go on, are there any, like, do you have any specific favorites in terms of sequels?
I'd say my top two favorite sequels, my favorite one being Texas Chainsaw Part 2.
Great choice.
Definitely my favorite sequel. If I'm trying to think about what my second favorite sequel is, that one's kind of hard. Probably, honestly, might be Hellraiser Part 2, but as far as like one that we haven't mentioned, I really enjoy Devil's Rejects. That's another one I really...
great movie. I haven't watched it since like a long, long time.
Yeah.
But again, like it's a perfect, like, House of a Thousand Corpses is a very sort of just, you know, it all just takes place in a house. It's like a classic haunted house style horror movie where, you know, teens get, you know, they find themselves in a situation and get fucked up, like, you know, like classic horror movie trope shit. Whereas Devil's Rejects, like, all of a sudden becomes this like road movie, and it's, yeah, so like starkly different from the first film.
Yeah.
And I think, like, as I say, like that's the key to making a great sequel in, as I say, in any genre. I think you need to kind of open it up in a way that's that allows you to kind of explore things that maybe weren't in the first one. Yeah. Although, like I said, like I kind of mentioned at the top of the show, that like there are probably, like, I feel like someone could easily say, oh yeah, but what about blah blah blah. Like, I was talking to my friend, actually. I mentioned we've been on tour with the band Corrupt Vision. Their guitarist Johnny, who runs a VHS store in San Diego. I forget the name of that he told me, but if anyone's in San Diego, go check out Johnny's store. He rocks. But we were talking about, like, we were talking about my third choice, which we'll get onto, being a franchise horror sequel. I don't want to give it away just yet. And then me saying that, like, oftentimes, like, these movies, like, don't need 10 different sequels. That, you know, like, maybe just a couple would have sufficed. And he rightly kind of said, Friday the 13th is the exception that proves the rule, in that those movies just kind of get better as they go along. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's the one where it's just like, yeah, fuck it, just do the same thing but sillier each time. I'm here for it. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, going back to, like, what my next choice was going to be, and I feel like this is pretty obvious, but I'm going to justify it anyway. Mm-hmm. My favorite in the whole series, including, like, I definitely enjoy it more than the original, is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. I think I really love the idea that, as I say, like, I believe John Carpenter was originally going to make it so that Halloween was just an anthology series where it was just a different story set on Halloween each year, that didn't necessarily have anything to do with Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Again, because I think something I've struggled with a lot of the Halloween sequels and remakes and stuff is that Michael Myers, certainly in the first Halloween movie, is like this perfect example of just a nameless, faceless, like, antagonist. And, like, the less you know about him, the better. Like, you know, like, he's a crazy guy that got out of the mental institution and he's doing some killing. And even, like, the fact that, like, obviously the first movie ends on the, like, you know, he gets shot and then disappears, and there's, like, hints that there might be something kind of supernatural about him, but, like, never really delves into it enough to give you a straight answer on it, like, which I think is perfect. And I kind of, like, I think about an alternate reality where that had been the only Michael Myers movie.
Yeah.
I, like, not to say that I don't enjoy some of the other sequels, but, like, that could have just been a perfect one and done. Like, who is this guy? We don't know, but here's a scary movie about it. Like,
Just like Black Christmas, yeah, with, like, the end of that, it's like the ending of that movie is why that movie is so good, with, like, the original Black Christmas, is because it's like you don't know. It's like so just still up in the air at the end, pretty much. Like, he's still around and you're all fucked. It's the same thing with the first Halloween. He's gone. It's like, where is he? Like,
exactly. Yeah. But yeah, as I say, like, I think by the time Season of the Witch comes around, it's such a bold move, especially, like, if they'd have done it, like, if it was like Halloween 2, and then, like, you know, that would have been a different story. But the fact that they'd already made two Michael Myers movies, and then they were just like, oh, here's another one, nothing to do with the other films that we've been showing you, like, I think that's a really bold move. I'm always confused by the fact that, so, John Carpenter didn't direct it.
No, it was Tommy Lee Wallace that did it.
Yeah. But it's got his fingerprints all over it. Like,
it
feels more like a classic John Carpenter movie than perhaps the original does.
Which I think the score helps, because he does score it too. So.
Of course, yeah. That's and it's one of my favorite John Carpenter scores. Like, I think, like, every time I put it on, which me and my wife we do every Halloween. Like, it's a tradition for us now. But, like, that intro with the, like, you know, the pumpkin head, like, lights up, and that score is just, I, like, just mainline that into my veins. Like, that's just pure John Carpenter fucking goodness. Yeah. Like, yeah, nothing like it. And yeah, and then the rest of the movie absolutely rocks, like the whole way through. Like, I remember trying to explain it to someone who'd not seen it and kind of saying it kind of plays out like a feature length episode of Goosebumps.
Definitely.
Which, like, and I just say, what's, I forget the name of the dude he's in The Fog as well, I think.
Oh, Tom Atkins.
Like, yeah, Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
Like, who rocks in that movie? Like, yeah. And like, the fucking the fact that he, like, literally, again, I'm forgetting the name of the female lead in that movie, but like, he meets her, and then, like, within minutes, it's like, yeah, let's go sort this mystery. Also, we're gonna have sex, like,
yeah,
within, like, hours of meeting each other. Like, it's like, yeah, I don't know what they were kind of like thinking. It was like Tom Atkins, like this sex god of the 80s. Like, but yeah, fucking, I don't know, as I say, every aspect of that movie is just so fun. So, like, again, it's another one that's kind of, and I think this is probably, like, again, I kind of think, like, John Carpenter's real wheelhouse that I think he, like, excels in is finding that space of, like, as I say, like, campy fun that also takes itself deadly seriously.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, it's not, there's no tongue in cheek there. Like, it might be, like, kind of silly, but, like, John Carpenter, the guy who directed this one, is absolutely, like, fucking not laughing. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. there's, and, like, that's kind of what I want, like, especially in an age where, like, I feel like everyone's super self-aware of everything now, and everything's, like, you know, like a meta joke about something else. And, like, I don't know, there's something really pure about that kind of media where it just, again, like, it's a difficult thing to describe, even because, like I say, it's not pretentious in anything that, like, that it takes itself so seriously. It just is, like, really, like, reaffirmed with how good it is, and kind of, like, allows itself, like you say, to be fun and silly, and but never sort of, like, as I say, it's never ironic, and it's always kind of like, no, just this is what we're doing. This is good. Yeah. Let's do it. Like, I don't know. Yeah, fucking. An absolute all-timer, one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. I love it dearly.
Now, I can't believe I forgot it when you asked me sequels, because that's probably my second favorite sequel of all time is Halloween 3, you know, next to Texas Chainsaw Part 2. And I'm with you. I like it better than the first Halloween. I like the first Halloween a lot and respect it, but
yeah,
I prefer 3. So.
Great minds, say. Yeah, I think, I mean, you mentioned Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 as well. That's another perfect example of a movie completely taking a left turn. Like,
yeah,
this, and because again, like, I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, is everything I just said about The Exorcist also applies to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, it's a perfect movie, an achingly perfect movie. Like, there is not a frame of that film that doesn't make my skin crawl. Like, it's so weird and fucking unusual. And it's like a movie that I've seen 100 million times since I was a teenager. And then I could still just sit there and just think about it all day. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it gets right under my skin and fucking burrows its way into my brain. Like, it's a confounding and profound masterpiece of a movie. So for them to take the sequel in the direction that they did is, like, to me, the only way that you could do that. Like, you can't make a second, like you can't make, like, the 1974, is it? The original?
Yeah, the first one, I think, is 74.
74, yeah. So the 74, like, you could not replicate that. Like, you couldn't, like, lightning doesn't strike twice. You can, no way that you could make another movie in that same setting and, like, have it be the same. So, like, the fact that, again, like, they kind of go super silly with it, like, you know, again, like, in a similar way where it's, like, fun and a little campy, but also, it's not like there's no like wink and a nudge there. Like it's a fucking great movie. One that I haven't watched in a very long time though. I think after this conversation, I'm gonna have to rectify that.
Hell yeah.
Because I have nothing but fond memories for that one. The other sequels to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I cannot say the same for. I think, is it 3 that's the one where I just remember having like the trailer on one of the, it was like a bonus feature on like one of the, like the DVD that I used to have of in like when I was a kid. And it's like Leatherface standing next to a river.
Yeah.
Or a lake or something, and like some kind of like fucking like art, like a maiden's like bejeweled arm comes out, and like throws this like silver chainsaw to him and stuff. It's like whack shit. Like that, like I remember at that time I hadn't even seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and I was just like, yo, what the fuck happened to these movies? They're like only like after 3 of them, this shit's happening. Like.
It's like they were trying to tease like a Jason Leatherface team up or some shit, and it just never came to fruition. But
yeah, it's as I say, it's kind of. I think I'm really trying to like rack my brains there for ones that I haven't thought of. There's kind of, I'm looking at my DVD shelf right now, and a movie that I haven't seen but I'm interested to is, and again, I don't know if really this falls under the category of horror, but you've seen Tetsuo, right?
Yeah, I've seen the first one, but I haven't seen any of the sequels. Or
yeah, so I just bought the Blu-ray that had the first and the sequel in.
Yeah,
which I haven't seen the sequel, and again, that's a. I've heard that it's like more weird than the first one, which I feel like it has to be seen to be believed. But like, I mean, that first one is a fucking. God, that blew my brains out when I watched that movie for the first time. Like,
yeah, same.
It, like, just because, like, I don't know. Like, I've always been kind of like super into like gothy industrial shit. Like, that's always been my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And there's something about just like even just like the pure aesthetic of that movie that is just so perfect for me. Like, and I remember watching it with my wife, who had the exact opposite reaction of being like, this is foul and I never want to see this film again. And I was just like, I could just live in this. You know what I mean? Like, just hook this into my brain and I'll have it on a loop every second of my life. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing the sequel to that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm really struggling to think of at least good. I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the last one, but so like with the Freddies, I don't think I'm saying anything controversial when I say Dream Warriors is the best one, of course.
Yeah.
I kind of have a soft spot for 2 because it is way super homoerotic in a way that I think is fun.
Yeah, it's got some great, and it's got some great Freddy moments, like the scene where he comes out at the pool party and is just fucking like slaughtering kids. That shit is one of the best Freddy moments in the whole franchise.
Exactly, yeah. I'm like, I really like New Nightmare as well.
Hell yeah, same.
I think that's like, it's such an interesting, like, cool way of doing it that, like, I think, like, I don't know, like, especially, you know, we'd like, well, like, obviously, Wes would like to go on to do Scream and, like, that kind of, like, meta sort of Ouroboros style you know, self-referential thing is just, it's such a, like, I don't think anyone else could have pulled that off in the way that he did. Rest in peace to the goat. I'm trying to think, because like I feel like I've really not kept up on, like, in terms of like the big horror franchise kind of movies. I know there's all the kind of like, well, I say like, this is how it makes me sound like super old and dated. Like, I'm referring to like the paranormal movies, Paranormal Activity movies as like the new wave of horror films, despite the fact they probably came out 20 years ago. But like, yeah, like, and like, there's all the kind of the Insidiouses and the Conjurings. Yeah, I'm not like, I've watched bits and pieces of those movies. I think they're fine if you like that type of thing. Not super my cup of tea. And so, yeah, like, I feel like whatever was kind of like sort of magic about the like classic horror franchises of the 80s, just kind of feels like lost now. I think, like, I don't know, like, maybe I don't think there's been a as captivating a character as, you know, a Michael Myers or a Freddy or a Jason in a long time. And I feel like that's really what, if you're going to make the same movie 10 times, like, you've got to have a fucking villain. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to have someone that, like, and that's to me, Freddy Krueger's the ultimate of that, where there's like this guy who's like effectively a pedophile. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's this like child, a best child murderer, who's all burnt and fucked up, but like, you just love him. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, as soon as that guy's on screen, he's like, fuck yeah, I fucking want to watch him. Almost 90 minutes of this dude, like,
right? He has great kills and talk shit while doing it. Why wouldn't you fucking like
exactly? It? Like, there's like just natural charisma there that I think, hasn't translated necessarily into the modern era.
One other sequel, I want to shout out is that I was thinking about, but I always forget because it's like not thought of as a sequel, is Argento's Inferno. I really like that film a lot.
That's a very good shout. I'm literally just like, this is dumb of me, but like, I'm literally just noticing I'm looking at a poster of Evil Dead 2 on your wall, which is like the ultimate horror sequel, in that it's like, again, like, fucking, that's probably an example of just like, yeah, taking the original, which I still obviously, like, I have very fond memories of being a kid and watching like Evil Dead 1, but like, Evil Dead 2 is just the greatest movie of all time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really not even like comparable to the first one. Like, it's a whole different, like,
And then
obviously Army of Darkness, which I watched fairly recently again, and like, it's rocks still as much as it did when I watched it when I was a kid.
Same. I love Army of Darkness myself.
I was kind of talking about with like what a bold move Season of the Witch was. Like, that's completely insane that like Sam Raimi was able to like convince the studio. It was like, okay, I've made two like shoestring budget scary cabin movies. I've got an idea for a third one that involves time travel to like a fucking medieval age. And like, we're just going to make a fantasy epic. Like, who bankrolled that? Like, what studio was like, yeah, cool, Sam, like, that sounds like a fucking great idea. Like, it's and it was, and I'm glad they did, but imagine that must have been a hard pitch.
I know, especially they said that they immediately turned down, he wanted to call it Medieval Dead, and they were like, I don't think so. It's like, the Army of Darkness is better, it separates it from the Evil Dead stuff, but
oh, of course, that's a good show.
I love that film as well. That's the only one I rewatched when Evil Dead Rise came out last year. That was like the only one I rewatched was Army of Darkness, and I was like, and it's because it like references the three Necronomicons that you see in Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, this movie, like, I'm with you. It still fucking kicks you so much ass. Good.
Like, a lot has been said about the many talents of Bruce Campbell, but like, you kind of watch those movies, and like, the dude's like Charlie Chaplin level like physical comedy. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just a captivating performer. Like, the visual, like, physical humor of it is second to none. Like, and like, it's funny to kind of like talk about it in those kind of that kind of terminology, but like, I think I would put him up there with like the greats of, as I say, kind of like that sort of what's the word I'm looking for here? Either way, fleeting memory. moving on, I was going to say
horror icons, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. Well, not even horror icons. Like, as I say, like, just like the classics of early cinema, where, you know, like, people were doing like classic slapstick like funny humor, like even like the Silent Guys, you know what I mean? Like I'd put Bruce Campbell up there with those dudes,
with like Chaplin and Buster Keaton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. What was I was gonna say, like, not a sequel by any stretch, but just while we're on the horror movie train, because I mentioned to you before that we started recording that like I haven't actually watched that many horror movies recently. I've just been kind of, I've been on a, I don't know, like I've just, it's one of those things that I kind of like, I feel like, especially now that like I've spent so much of my life watching like every horror movie, I feel like it has to be something like super out there in order to like capture my attention.
Yeah.
That being said, I have like a cinema pass thing. So me and my wife kind of try and go to the cinema as much as possible. Because I think, like, yeah, whatever the deal is, like if you go twice, you make your money back, kind of that type of thing.
Yeah.
And we went to see the Sydney Sweeney like Scary Nun movie.
Hell yeah! How was that? I haven't seen it yet.
Not great. Let me tell you now. It's doesn't know what it wants to be. And it was like, it's kind of shot nice. Like this, like that was kind of, cause I remember seeing the trailer and being like, okay, maybe this is something a bit more than I'm expecting.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like plot wise and even like scares wise, it was left a lot to the imagination. Like there's not really like, it's sort of, I don't want to spoil it, but it feels like a lot of missed opportunities for like a lot cooler of a movie. Which is, yeah, kind of, again, disappointing, but I don't ever regret going to the movies, man. Like it's, you know what I mean? Like put me in a big chair with a bag of popcorn and like, that's a fun night out for me, even if I'm watching something that I'll forget 10 minutes afterwards.
Right. No, and sometimes you end up watching movies and they're funner because you saw them in the theater, you know, that if you watch them at home, they might not be as good. So, no,
and I mean, of course, like, I mean, as I say, like, not a horror movie in any respect, but perhaps the most horrific movie that I've seen in recent memory. We went to see Zone of Interest.
How was that?
Which I thought was, again, like, I don't really know how to express, you know, like, I didn't like it. Like, yeah. it was a deeply sad and fucking harrowing experience, but like I thought it was good. But again, there's kind of like, it does like the 2001 style kind of completely blacked out screen with a super oppressive soundtrack for like the first 10 minutes of the movie. And it was like, it just pummels you with just, as you say, you're sitting in complete darkness with this like insane, intense score happening. And like, it was one of those experiences that I thought like, this wouldn't translate necessarily to watching it at home on even on a Blu-ray or whatever. And it really did like, it made me think about like, this is what theaters are for, do you know what I mean? Like this some movies are just made for that experience. Funnily enough, I have referenced there, I think the week after there was a showing of 2001,
hell yeah,
that we went to as well. And again, like a movie that I've seen 100 billion times in my life, but never seen in the theater. And like it's overwhelming, like it felt like a religious experience. Like as I say, like, and just again, like I say, like especially like whether it's, you know, like whether it's a horror movie or, you know, like a sci-fi in that respect, or if it's just whatever kind of like intense of cinema experience you're looking for, like just being immersed in it like that, there really isn't anything quite like it. Like I don't know. I'm all for going to the movies. Thumbs up, five bags of popcorn.
Now, I drove an hour like a week ago to see Immaculate, and when I got there, they were having problems with their projector and had canceled all the showings of Immaculate. And I was like, you fuckers. So I ended up seeing Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which I know it's getting kind of mixed reviews. I had a blast with it. It felt like a long episode of the cartoon.
And that's, I mean, that's kind of what you should probably expect from those movies, right? Like as I say, like it's that kind of like, as is, cause sort of like fun, nostalgic IP, like like it's as I say, kind of, I always kind of think like people who get mad, I don't know why, it's always the fucking Ghostbusters for some reason. People seem to get really like irate about that shit. And I was kind of like, I was saying that, like, you know, like it's not like fucking, you know, like they're not remaking The Godfather. You know what I mean? Like it's a show about like a fun, kooky guys that go around chasing ghosts and stuff. Like it's supposed to be silly. Like it's better than it is silly. Like
people were less up in arms about West Side Story getting remade, and it's like that's a fucking classic film. Like
of course
it was Spielberg doing it, but still, it's like fucking.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't, like as I say, it's kind of, I suppose it's with anything. Like as soon as you kind of like mess with people's nostalgia, there's something just wiring in their brain. Like, have you seen all the shit about the Crow remake with what's his name? One of the Sarsgaards.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the trailer, but I'll check the movie out once it hits some streaming. That's for sure.
I was gonna say, I'll certainly watch it. Like, it looks bad. Like, don't get me wrong. But like, I kind of, it made me have like a conversation with myself where I was thinking, I was thinking back to like when I was a kid and I would watch The Crow, and like I have very fond memories of you know watching that movie. But I was kind of like, I was watching it, and I was thinking like, was The Crow that good in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking, and I had to sort of like sit down. I haven't yet rewatched it, but like it's been long enough. It's probably been like 10 years since the last time I watched it. And I kind of like, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm sure it is good. Like, as I say, like I definitely loved it when I was a kid. But it's one of those things where like, I kind of had to second guess myself and just been like, oh, is my, like the fact that I'm so like, I don't know, like pissed off at this like remake, like obscuring the memory of this like thing that I used to love when I was a kid.
It's just like, it's been that long enough that like, I don't know whether it's good still. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think like, I think a lot of people maybe when they get super irate about fucking, whatever the new remake it is or whatever. And it's always one of those where it's kind of like how big of a part of your life is fucking the Ghostbusters or fucking The Crow or whatever that you're like mad about it. Like, you know what I mean? It's kind of, I don't know. Yeah. Like it's maybe there is a guy who's watching The Crow like every week. like he's just, puts on The Crow, puts on the Ghostbusters, puts on The Crow, puts on the Ghostbusters, and like that guy, he has the right to be mad.
Which I can understand people arguing more for The Crow because Brandon Lee died making it, and it's like his family's still around and alive. And
of course, but there's been like, because there was sequels. Like, I don't think I watched any of the sequels. There's the one with like John Connor, right? Like,
that was garbage.
So like, his memory has long been desecrated.
I know. For sure. But I just mean, the internet wasn't around for people to bitch, you know, back then like that. Well, so I'm sure they would have. That's for sure.
Very, very true. Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna rewatch The Crow. I was kind of questioning it there, which just like, oh, you know, maybe it's just like, maybe I'm seeing it through rose tinted glasses. The more I think about it, it's like, that movie kind of rocks though. Like actually.
Yeah, most of the Ghostbusters fans, they just have Bill Murray butt plugs and they're just fucking too uptight about it. They're just
it's one of those things where, and I get it, like I love Bill Murray as much as the next guy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I watched, me and my wife watched Tootsie the other night. It's so good. Like, it's fucking, it's just, and like, obviously, so Bill Murray plays the roommate, like the kind of like, and it's weird because I'd not seen him in that sort of like supporting actor, in like a, you know, like he always seems, he's like a leading guy, you know.
But yeah, just seeing him and Dustin Hoffman fucking goof around is the like a beautiful moment that I'm going to cherish for the rest of my life. Like, yeah, two of the greats for sure.
Hell yeah. Any more recent horror movies that you've seen or anything like that you want to shout out before I let you go?
I'm gonna literally, I'm sorry for the viewers or listeners even, this is bad radio. I'm going on to my Letterboxd account and trying to see what was the last scary movie that I watched. I rewatched High Tension or Haut Tension.
Switchblade
Romance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have had the same issues with it that I always had when I watched it 10 years ago, in that it is a fucking excellent movie up until that twist ending, which is garbage.
Yeah, it makes the whole movie not make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe I just wasn't as sort of clued into this type of thing, but like it's pretty offensive as well. Like, I won't spoil it for anyone, but like it's, yeah, doesn't exactly hold up to today's values, shall we say. Like,
yeah, and rewatches definitely don't work with it either, because it's like once you know the twist, you're watching parts of that movie like that doesn't fucking make sense. Like, how would that happen?
Yeah, like yeah. It's like this is a real like obvious kind of like plot holes and stuff. Like, yeah. It's a shame because like I remember when those movies, like the kind of like what's it like French what's it like
yeah, New French Extreme. Yeah,
I remember when all that stuff was coming out and being like, this is the most fucked up that cinema could possibly be, and like these movies are just brutal, like, and like I remember it being like this real exciting era, and like I kind of feel like, again, like that one, the first half of it is cool, but like, as I say, really badly let down.
Yeah.
I rewatched Inside not too long ago, which I didn't like as much as I did when I watched it, you know, 10-15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
I still think Masters is probably good, but that's like because it's so like I can't imagine that the sort of like shock value of that movie is going to wear off.
Yeah, the last 30 soon. Minutes like, is rough. Yeah,
it's the roughest possible thing. Like, it's one of the only times in my life where when I was watching it on like some like I'd got like a. Like a pirate website type of thing, and like I was watching from some sketchy link on my laptop, and like I remember pausing the movie like sort of halfway through the last 30 minutes and just like pacing around my room and just kind of asking myself, like, do you like this? Like, why why are you doing this to yourself? Like, is, do you know what I mean? It's like, is this the type of guy I am that enjoys things like this? And it's a movie that I've watched very many times since then, so I guess I am that guy. but yeah, like I say, like just a fucking oof, yeah. Gut punch of a movie. So I think that one is probably the sort of the best of that era.
Yeah, I'd agree for sure.
But yeah, also maybe I'm again, like, sorry for this. We've got I've really been like. Yeah, not watching anything. I watched Saltburn. I suppose that kind of broadly maybe was a horror movie.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was good at first, and then it kind of slowly, as the hype built around it, I was like, all right, guys, it's not that good. And now it kind of has like worked its way back down, because I was like, all right, it was good. But yeah. Like, the hype around it has made me just be like, fine. It was
again, that's another one where like there's like a kind of twist at the end, which makes you think like, okay, well, none of the rest of this movie makes sense now. Like,
yeah,
because there's so much stuff that like the, again, trying to say this without spoiling too much, but like Barry Keoghan's character, like he does so much stuff out of view of any other character in the movie.
Yeah.
So for it to be this kind of like Machiavellian scheme of his, it was like, okay, well, who was that for the benefit of when you were in the bathtub? Who were you doing that for, buddy?
Yeah, that stuff. And then, of course, like, some of the stuff he, like, hit, like, in his plan is all, like, based on if they react a certain way. You know, like, for instance, at the bar, when he acts like he doesn't have money and he's like, oh, Felix will come save me or whatever. It's like, that's only if Felix comes to fucking save you, dude. Like,
Yeah, like, as I say, like, yeah, if it kind of, yeah, it was messy. I'm just looking now here, actually. So, God, was it? I'm going back to all the way to October since we last watched some horror movies. But I watched The Hunger for the first time. Have you ever seen that? The
David Bowie, I think.
David Bowie, yeah. Tony Scott's first movie.
Yeah.
Who I fucking love, Tony Scott. Like, one of my faves. But yeah, that surely must be the first, like, sexy vampire movie. Like, I feel like that's patient zero of that kind of genre. Rules, like, so fucking good. Like, complete nonsense storyline that, like, again, like, barely makes sense as it's rolling along. Yeah. But it looks so cool, and it's so fucking fun seeing, like, because, yeah, it's David Bowie. Susan Sarandon is the... I can't remember who the lady vampire is. I'm pretty sure Willem Dafoe in that movie as well.
I don't remember. I haven't seen it. I've seen it once, but it's been years. I just remember it was like Tony Scott.
Yeah, that's fucking... Yeah, that movie is sick as fuck as well. I also watched... I've got here, like... And this, again, this is not a horror movie, but I think it's frightening, so I'm going to include it here. Night of the Hunter, Charles Lawrence. Fucking... Like, especially for, like, what, that movie came out, like, 53 or some shit? Like, like, bone-chilling. Like, absolutely, like, Robert Mitchum is fucking terrifying in that film. And, like, it's such a sad, like, I remember, like, reading up on it afterwards and about how, like, Charles Lawton, the director, he was, like, critically commercial flop. Like, absolutely... and across the board to the point where he never made another movie again.
Yeah.
And just the fact that, like, that's one of the fucking best movies I've ever seen. Like, it's so sad to think that, like, and I believe he died, like, not too long afterwards as well. So yeah, there's an element, like, he never really got to, like, witness any of the praise that film got.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, as I say, like, it's for, especially for that era, but, like, even though I believe it, it feels timeless to me in the sense that, like, it still is fucking deranged. Yeah, like, as I say, really fucking sick as fuck, frightening movie.
The downside of, like, cult classics and stuff is that they don't find the ground immediately, or the people in the business just don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like, it could really ruin somebody's career before they really get a chance to show, you know, what they
can really do. I was thinking about this in the sense of, like, especially now in, like, the streaming ages, where... if stuff doesn't hit big numbers, it just gets deleted off of fucking Netflix or whatever. And so, like, that makes me think of, like, all the, like, all-time classic cult movies, you know, like fucking The Thing or Blade Runner or, you know, like, all these, like, fantastic all-timer films that did not get, like, their audience immediately, and it took years of, like, being in, like, the, you know, the VHS market and kind of, and, you know, like, work themselves up to be cult films.
Yeah.
Like, if those movies got released today, they'd just be forgotten about, like, and they'd get deleted off the server and no one would ever watch them again. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's really is a bummer that there's probably so many great would-be cult movies that just aren't getting the traction because... you literally just get your 5 minutes to, you know, make a big splash. If not, then you're into the pile. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Other directors have already moved on in their careers. And, you know, like, you might want to be a director, but if you're already a fucking real estate agent for 10 years, it's like, oh, now people love my shit. I'm not going to go start directing again because now everything's changed in the business. And
of course. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, like, have no experience in, like, the actual kind of, like, industry side of things, but I imagine if it's anything like every other industry on the face of the planet, certainly in this like this the entertainment sphere, then you have movies are fucked, just like movies. Music is fucked also. Fucking books are probably fucked. art in general is completely fucked.
Yeah. No, definitely. That's why I still collect physical media, but even then, it's like not everything. You know, like Barbarian's one of my favorite movies of the last few years, and that still has not got a physical media release, and there's no plans of it. And I'm like, so what if it, like you said, what if that leaves all streaming? It's one of the best rated movies of the last few years, horror wise. A lot of people love that movie, and like, but yet they have to go find a bootleg Blu-ray on eBay or something, you know, to have it.
Yeah, that's media. I did not realize that. That's like shocking to me. Like,
yeah, it's one of the few, but.
I mean, because it's a real sort of, especially like there's a lot of movies, you know, like as I say, like of like outside of horror movies and stuff. I've also like as I say, I'm a physical media kind of guy, but then there's certain films that like my favorite ever director, this guy Abbas Kiarostami, the Iranian director. He made Close Up and Where's the Friend's House and stuff like that. And like a lot of those movies just aren't like, I think there's like Criterion put out like a box set of some of them, but then there's a couple of them there that just don't exist anymore. And like, especially when you're like, you know, in like either England or the States or whatever, trying to trace down a like old Iranian movie is fucking nigh on impossible. Even if it is like, you know, a revered, like critically acclaimed director. And yeah, there must, like I say, like there must be just fucking, I can't imagine the amount of not even just movies, like records that like, you know, there's probably the sickest ever records that just no one bothered to upload to Spotify or whatever, that have just like, I don't know, collecting dust in a box somewhere. It's one of those things that I suppose, like, yeah, as much as there's, you know, there's positives of the fact that we have all of this, you know, with the internet you kind of have the access to everything that's ever been created at the tip of your fingertips, like it's not always as simple as that. Like you say, these things can easily just, especially when like they're being controlled by, as I say, like the ratings of the average Netflix user.
Yeah,
like that's a very precarious kind of system to credit like great art on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, especially if you put like a very gruesome, like brutal horror movie on Netflix, it might get rated poorly by a bunch of people that stumble upon it because of, you know, weird marketing or something, to where if you put that shit on Shudder, you know, you got the right group of, you know, but that's the problem with Netflix, is like anybody can stumble upon that shit. It's not for like one group. So it's like certain things could get torn apart by bad reviews or like even just, you know, poor ratings, when it's like, that just wasn't for you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's a nail on the head. For sure.
No, and it can definitely tear stuff down, like you said. And that's the kind of stuff that gets pushed off streaming. And then you're like, oh, never. And Netflix is weird. They won't let like a lot of stuff get physical media releases. So it's like.
Of course. Yeah. Like, I mean, I imagine there's some kind of super sketchy contract involved in doing that. But like, yeah, these kind of like institutions very rarely operate in a way that's like is fair and just, you know what I mean? So it doesn't surprise me in the slightest to learn that Netflix is evil.
Yeah, where like Shudder, for instance, like you'll have like a lot of those movies will also be attached to RLJE, you know, and the RLJE will be the company that does like the Blu-ray and, you know, this or that and stuff. So, or it'll be Dread Central, and Dread Central will do the Blu-ray, and Shudder will do the streaming, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah,
well, hell yeah. Well, I appreciate you for coming on the show, man. Anything you want to shout out or anything like that before I let you go? Or
I might as well I'm gonna shout out some friends and bands from Birmingham, just just in case anyone listening wants to check out some cool shit from the middle of England. My friends in Transistor, sick as fuck, like queercore punk fucking noisy shit. The sweetest people in the world, I love them dearly, and their band Rules. We got Spiral Down, whose singer Alex is a fucking sweetheart. Love him. Fuck, who's still around? A lot of bands breaking up these days. As I say, it's kind of people falling to the wayside. Yeah, fucking Nerve Agent, fucking Dead Slow, fucking who am I forgetting? Ah, I'm gonna kick myself because I'm gonna listen back to this and it's gonna be like my best friend's band or something. But yeah, Mold, shit, yeah, fucking yeah. Shouts to Mold. Yeah, shouts to all of Birmingham hardcore and punk. I love you all dearly. But yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Hell yeah, definitely. And I'll check out some of those bands and maybe get some of those people on the show as well. So
100%, yeah. I think Alex would be a good one. He's a movie buff.
I'll definitely reach out for sure. I appreciate you, man. It was a blast chatting with you again. And, you know, we'll do a third one of these down the road at some point and, you know,
absolutely. Talk about some other... Anytime you want me back, I will be happy to speak to you. Like, this is fun. Fucking a pleasure as always.
Hell yeah, man. Hopefully I'll catch you in the States next year for sure. I'll be manifesting sick. That for you guys.
Sick, yeah. And I just say to any listeners, go and stream We Need You to Bleed by Flesh Creep. Fucking.
Fuck yes.
Let's get those numbers up.
Hell yeah. Definitely. I appreciate you, man.
And yeah, as usual, I just want to say thanks again for listening, and make sure you check back next week. So I'll be joined by the one and only makeup effects artist, Christian Tinsley, who worked on a recent favorite, Renfield, as well as the upcoming Terrifier 3 and a ton more. So make sure you check back next week for that. Go follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and X for all updates on the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by just sharing it around or rating and subscribing wherever you're listening. Or if you'd like to sign up for the Patreon, it's only $2 a month. The link for that is in the description. Thank you everyone again for listening and stay safe.